Real quick before we start, do me a favor, go to voxmedia.com/podsurvey. Our company's doing a little survey about what podcasts to listen to, which ones we can make better. I would love it if you took that survey and plugged The Verge. This week on The Vergecast, we talk about Apple's enormous number of announcements, new iMacs, new iPads, AirPods, no AirPower. We preview Apple's streaming TV event next week, and we talk a lot about Google Stadia, its new streaming service.
Support for the podcast comes from Canva. Presenting to a group of your colleagues can be nerve-wracking, so why not ease some of that anxiety with Canva? Thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and that's it. You're done. It's a serious time saver. Whatever you do for work, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu.
Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
Hello, and welcome to The Vergecast, the flagship podcast of the Vox Media Network, which I said out loud at South by Southwest.
No one stopped you.
Vox Media executives all over the place. And nobody rushed the stage. I still work here.
Does that make it true?
It's true now. It's as true as it's ever been, which is a medium amount of true. Anyway, hi, I'm Neli, your buddy. Dieter Bohn is here.
Your pal.
Paul Miller.
Hello.
It's a wild week of news. There's a lot going on. An overwhelming amount of things going on.
Nonstop.
And so Paul suggested that we do this, and I think it's a good idea. We're going to not talk about Facebook and content moderation and data leaks and that stuff this week. We do it almost every other week. There was actually just another huge Facebook scandal. Facebook apparently stored hundreds of millions of passwords in plain text, accessible by a wide range of employees.
So what's new?
There it is again. And obviously, you know, there was the horrific shooting in New Zealand. There's a lot of tech and platforms, moderation. What do we keep up? How do we get it down? All of that's happening in the world. I don't want to ignore it. But there's a bunch of tech news that is worth talking about as well. So if you want to get in-depth on that stuff, there's only one place to go. It's theverge.com/theinterface. That's Casey Newton's newsletter. It comes out every day. It covers social media and democracy. Casey does a great job. He's been on the show a bunch. He actually interviewed Alex Stamos, Facebook's former head of security, on this show on Tuesday. So you can listen to Casey and Alex talk about that stuff. So if you want to get into that stuff, if that's what you want this week, listen to that episode. Go to theverge.com/theinterface. Casey's your guy. The three of us are going to talk about some gadgets this week.
Nothing but.
There's just a lot of gadget news. Apple literally released one product a day this week, which was...
Well, for 3 days. And then today, we're recording on Thursday. We're all like,
And there was not a... But today was the iPad mini review day. Google announced Stadia, which is their cloud gaming service, which seems insane.
Call your doctor if you experience dry mouth or other symptoms.
It's true. It's not a great name. And then on Monday, Apple's having a gigantic streaming event. So let's just start with the Apple stuff. I reviewed the iPad mini this week. That's out today. It's on theverge.com on YouTube. You can read that, watch that. Dieter, you've got the iPad Air.
I do. Yeah.
A lot of the YouTube commenters made fun of me because I said your name like 10 times in that video. I was like,
yeah,
Dieter's
going to review the Air. I was like, yeah, I know. Well, I'm watching the video.
The way we make the videos is we like shoot them in sections. And I just sort of forgot that I'd said it, but I forgot it again. So we just kept saying it.
A lot of pressure on me, man.
You better review the fucking Air. The people are counting on you. Anyway, so I've got the mini. So on, what is it, Tuesday, Apple announced a new iPad mini, a new iPad Air. They've got basically the same specs. The main difference is the size and the Air has a keyboard, a smart keyboard connector. So A12 processor, True Tone displays, medium cameras, basically, lightning ports, not USB-C, bezels, touch. I mean, these are old designs. The Mini in particular, the design is 7 years old.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I don't even know where to start. The bezels, like, meh. Like, everyone's saying these are parts bin devices. And yeah, sure. But also, you said this in the Mini review, like, so what? Who else is making tablets of this class?
Yeah.
Well, what? Which parts bin do you go to find an iPad Mini screen with pencil support?
Well, no, I think pencil support is like, it's the first gen pencil, right? Like, I don't mean parts bin in the sense that Johnny Ive like literally walks into a room with like a wall of blue bins and assembles a modular iPad. I mean, this is a remix of technologies Apple has already developed.
Yeah, they didn't fundamentally change the casing. They didn't make the screen bigger and get rid of the bezels. It's like parts bin insofar as like they used a bunch of like established technologies and established like, you know, bodies. It is genuinely hard, I assume, to take an A12 processor and put it in a box that was previously designed for whatever the iPad Mini had before, an A3. I mean,
an A8. It is.
I don't know. A8. Okay. Sorry. Same thing. Actually, iPad Air is a whole other ball of wax, which we should get to. But the point is, like, whether or not you're like salty about them not changing the overall design of the thing, it doesn't really make a huge difference, because what other tiny little tablet is anywhere in the ballpark of this good? Who do they have to compete with?
Yeah, so you know, I said that, and I said Android tablets don't have a great app ecosystem in their view. And then, like you do, and the thing publishes at 7 a.m., and 7:10, 7:15 rolled by, and I was like, I wonder what the Android fanboys are mad about. And I went and checked, and they're all like, the Galaxy Tab S5e is a competitor to this. And that might be true. They just announced it. The S5e has a 10.5-inch display. It's like, it's not. It's just the only other like premium Android tablet in the world. Right, and there's the weird Lenovo one that turns into an Alexa with a screen when you put it in the dock. It's like $150.
There's a Huawei MediaPad, something, something.
But all like Android tablet apps, this is true. Android tablet apps suck, don't exist, and they really do look like gigantic phone apps. And the iPad app ecosystem, which I think runs into problems on sort of the iPad Pros, like is kind of great on the Mini.
Yeah,
and like so, what I was saying before we started was, I cut a bunch of stuff out of the Mini review because I realized it's all just reflective of like the Mini being damning about the other iPads, right? So it's not about the Mini, but the Mini exists with an A12 processor, and like iOS 12 on the Mini is fine because there's no way you're going to replace your laptop with this. There's no way you're going to replace your phone with this. Like just by the nature of its size, it's a secondary computing device. And so iOS 12 as a secondary computing environment is great, right? You can kind of like make it do a bunch of stuff. You're like, I'm watching a video. I want to browse the web. I'm going to throw the video in a pip window. I'm going to bang around here for a while. Oh, I want to like listen to some music. I'm going to throw that window out the way. I'm going to like pop over this app. Like all that's cool. Like it's like, super cool. And then you try to like extend it onto a Pro and you're like, this is my computer now. And you're like, this is broken.
So just to clarify, it's not damning of the other iPads as far as their features and then they exist and their size and stuff. It's damning of their aspirations.
Yeah. Like I think the fact that the Mini doesn't carry any expectations, like it's so obviously a secondary device. Hmm. Like no one in the world buys an iPad Mini and is like, this is my only computer. The way that lots of people in the world buy a phone and they're like, this is my only computer. And lots of people have a laptop and that's their main computer. And some people have an iPad Pro. Like no one is buying a Mini, or at least I haven't heard from them. People love the Mini. This is a true story. Actually, let me say this first. So I'm talking to Apple. I'm like, why'd you update this thing? I thought it was going away. I thought, you know, small, like phones are getting bigger. Everyone just assumed the Mini would die. You haven't updated in like 3.5 or 4 years. And they were like, yeah, that's kind of what we thought too. But then people kept buying them. And then Apple, like, and so they did all this research and they realized that the Mini, I think when it was first put out, was the cheapest iPad, right? They cut the screen size down. It was the cheapest one. It was the entry point of the ecosystem. And they realized that some people were buying it because it was cheaper, but the vast majority of Mini owners were buying it because they wanted the size. And they realized the size was the primary determinant of the purchase. So they're like, look, the people who want the cheap one, we think they're better served with the $329 9.7-inch iPad. And I think that we we've now seen this over and over again. Price conscious buyers want bigger screens, right? So like across the Android ecosystem, you can buy any number of cheap phones with huge screens. It's just a thing. That iPhone XR bizarrely has one of the biggest, bigger screens in the lineup, is the cheapest phone. So we know that people who are price conscious want bigger screens. So they made this iPad, the 9.7 inch iPad, which has a big, albeit not as good screen. And they're like, but people want the size, so we're just going to keep making the thing at the size, and people are going to keep buying them. I think the design comes down to, we got to hold the price point. We can make a lot of margin on this thing. Two, like, you know, like Home Depot ships like thousands of these to customer service agents every year, like come to your house and like show you a kitchen. Pilots use them. Like, it's a drop-in replacement for all these enterprise applications.
Oh, and so like they can't change the form factor too much because there's a whole bunch of like point of sale boxes that the old one slotted into and they need the new one to slot into.
It's kind of the vibe I got, right? But then it's like, yeah, but you could have probably gotten rid of the bezels and kept the you know, like, but I think there's like an element here where like you can just keep the cost. And then I honestly think that A8 processor, the iPod Touch and the iPad Mini were sort of like the last standing A8 devices. And like, it's got to cost more to keep building old chips than to just take some A12s off the iPhone line, right? Like you're going to make a billion iPhones this year. Surely you can spare a couple million A12s. So I think there's just some economy of scale. Like people are still buying this product. We can actually reduce cost by using a bunch of existing technologies, make the thing a little bit better. We don't have to overthink it. People will just keep buying it. Then I think that's just where the Mini landed. They didn't invent anything. I think the first gen Pencil is ridiculous. It is a ridiculous thing. It has always been a ridiculous thing. I've never liked it. I've always thought the charging is stupid. But it's there. It works. If you want to do that thing, you can do that thing.
Yeah.
Here's some breaking news. They told me that when the next version of iOS 12 comes out, presumably next week to support the streaming service, the Logitech Crayon will work with the iPad Pros. So
really?
If you want to break some news right now, you heard it here first on the Vergecast.
This is very exciting.
I don't know who's buying a $1,500 iPad Pro and a Logitech Crayon.
Will it work with last generation iPad Pros? Because like the Crayon is a genuinely better design than the Apple Pencil. It doesn't roll off the table. It's easier to charge.
I have no idea.
Okay.
I mean, look, if you want to start your Logitech Crayon vlog and break it down, I support you. There was a time when every individual tech product had like a micro blog devoted to it. But anyway, so the thrust of my review is basically like, I'd forgotten how much I liked having an iPad Mini. And the main thing that I like about it is that I don't feel rude using it. It's an unquantifiable thing. But I go to a lot of meetings. I try not to take my laptop to meetings. I want to be focused. Laptops are very distracting. And then every now and again, I'm like, I need to look at something. I need to take a note. I pull up my phone, and I feel instantly rude. This happens all the time, right? And like Dieter sends me a Slack. I just want to quickly answer the Slack. I pull up my phone, just feel super rude. Someone says something like, I have a terrible memory. I need to write that down. Pull up my phone, feel super rude. But the Mini, it's just like, I want to pull out this thing. It's like pretty purpose-driven. You can see what I'm doing, more or less. And I'm just like, get this thing done and like come back to you. And it's not a laptop. It's not a big iPad with like all this like, it's just like the size of a notebook.
The way you're describing it kind of sounds like it's a big phone for you.
Yeah, but so here's the other damning thing. So there's like iOS 12 on the Mini is damning to the big iPad because I think it works great on the Mini because it doesn't have these aspirations to replace a laptop, so it works.
Right.
And then it's damning to the phone because it's an A12 processor with a lower resolution screen. It has less pixels on its screen than the iPhone XS, right? And it has more multitasking features. So like, why can't I run a pip window for YouTube on my iPhone XS Max? Like, just can't do it. and this iPad Mini can do it. And I think that's ridiculous. So that's right. It's like damning kind of like both directions, right? Mm. Like, why can't I just split screen two apps on this iPhone XS Max? Like, there's honestly no reason I shouldn't be able to do that. But you're right in that I kind of feel like it's a giant phone, but the phone just has so much cultural baggage when you pull it out.
Mm.
Like, you're in a meeting, you're talking to someone, your phone, you're like, start using your phone. It's a cliche. Like, my face is buried in my phone all day long. I literally don't feel that way when I use the iPad Mini. I feel like it's just so much more purpose-driven because it is so obviously not my primary computer. And it's as squishy of a reason to like a tech device as anything. But I certainly felt like I'm using my phone less. I don't feel compelled to use my laptop for this X set of things. And when I'm done, I'm going to be done.
My strange idea is if you pulled out your phone during a meeting and that was rude, and then you unfolded it and it was about the size of an iPad mini, would it become less rude?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all I want to know.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone else is showing off foldable phones that are about this size. Apple's like, check out these bezels. It has an 8-megapixel camera with an f2.4 lens. Like, yeah, you're absolutely right. But it's also $399.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And like, I said this in the review and I'll say it again. Like, every iOS device I've reviewed for like the past 2 years has been like skyrocketing in price. The iPad Pro I reviewed, I think, was specced at $2,200. The iPhone XS Max that I reviewed is like specced at $1,200. So you're like, I'm always just like doing this dance. Like, is this worth it? Like, did this ambition get realized? Will this last? Is this random feature that Apple, like, and we do this with expensive Android phones too, right? Everything's just getting bigger and more complicated, more expensive. The iPad Mini is like, it looks the same as it did 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. The processor in it, well, the last one lasted for 4 years. This will probably last you for 4 years. It's cost $400. Do you want a tablet of this size? This is the only one you can buy. Like, it's just so simplified my thought process of the review. Like, do I want a tablet of this size?
Well, and everybody that looked at it, touched it, thought about it, was like, oh yeah, small tablets are really neat, which made me think of, do you guys remember from 2011, the HTC Flyer?
Oh my God, yes.
So the reason I thought of this is the HTC Flyer came out about a year before the original iPad mini. It was an Android tablet, like 7 inches or so, and you could use a stylus with it. And one of our producers, Creighton DeSimone, great guy, was obsessed with this thing. Carried it around. I was like, I'm doodling. I'm like being really productive. I've got all my stuff on it, and I could hold it in one hand. And then the iPad mini came out a year later, and it didn't have stylus, but it had that like, oh yeah, small tablets are great. And then it's like slowly disappeared out of most people's minds, except for Walter S. Mossberg, who still used and loved his, that now that it's come back, everyone's like, oh yeah, this is great. Like I actually do like having a device this size. And that social thing that you've been talking about, Neil, like the one-handedness of it, the notebookness of it, mm-hmm. and potentially the stylusness of it, having to be able to use a stylus with it if you want to, It has a different effect on the room. It doesn't carry that social baggage. And it reminds you of, like, it was really convenient to have, like, a little tablet.
Yeah. And I honestly think everyone just forgot about it. Like, maybe Apple didn't do a bad thing by letting the old one sit for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone forgot that it exists. You know what group of people is bizarrely excited about this? They've, like, been tweeting me. It's, like, pilots. Like, pilots are like, yep, this is the best thing for the cockpit that's ever existed. We just want iPad minis. We finally have them. We're going to buy new ones. We're super into it. So there's all these, like, weird little use cases and corners. But for me, it's literally comes down to I just can't work on an iPad Pro. It's, like, never worked out for me. I have people with different experiences. And I just think it's rude to have my phone all the time. So what fits in this middle zone, it's this product, and it's $400. And at $400, it's hard to like over nitpick it.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the iPad Air for a second.
Yeah.
I'm working on the review. It will include the phrase, it's an iPad, but I don't actually think it's just an iPad. I think it's something more interesting. But I tweeted this thought and I've been rolling around in my head and I think I know the answer now, but I want to hear from you guys. We just had the reintroduction of the MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. And now we have the reintroduction of the iPad Air. What do you think Air means now?
The middle. That's what it means.
Right?
Right?
It
means the middle one.
Well, but it's interesting because at one time it was aspirational and now it means middle.
It was never really aspirational. Like, it was aspirational for the first ever MacBook Air, which was ridiculously expensive.
Right. Yep. It was aspirational for the first iPad Air.
No, the iPad Air was not priced like the Pro. Like, it came out at the same price points as the iPad 4 Retina. Was there an iPad 4 Retina? There was.
But it was the best thing.
They moved that one down. Yeah, it was the best one. It was the newest
iPad, and for a while, the iPad or the MacBook Air was this thing that was way expensive for what you'd get, but you aspired to have it because it was ridiculously thin.
Yeah.
And now it's a boring computer, and iPad Air is a boring iPad.
Well, no, but it's not as boring as the iPad. It's a little bit more expensive. I think what Air means is it means the middle one, and it means you take a Pro and you pull out a lot of the stuff that makes it super expensive, and then it becomes an Air. So a MacBook Pro has a brighter screen, a couple more ports maybe, depending on which one you get. It's got the touch bar. It's got, really high-end GPU. It's got a decent processor. Well, so then Apple's, okay, so take all the stuff that a normal person won't notice day-to-day when they're, browsing the web and checking email, yank that out, it becomes the Air. I think the same thing applies to the Pro. What do you lose? Well, the screen is, I think, slightly worse on the Air compared to the Pro, at least in terms of it doesn't have that, that nice rounded stuff.
And it doesn't have ProMotion.
Doesn't have ProMotion, but it sells True Tone. You lose a couple extra speakers, and you get a step down in processor. Will the average iPad user miss any of that? I think that you also lose USB-C. The average iPad user will not. The one step down that I've noticed going from a Pro back to an Air is, oh God, the sound's coming out of one side of it, which is really weird. I didn't think I cared about that. But once it's gone, you're like, oh, that sounds weird. but other than that, whatever. And the other nice thing about the Air is the iPad Air is, before, if you wanted to buy an iPad, you had an incredibly terrible choice in front of you. You can buy a $330 iPad, and then if you want to type something, you got to find a Bluetooth keyboard or and you're like, I want that keyboard connector. I want to be able to have a keyboard if I want it. And in order to get there, you would have to spend $300 to $400 more. Just a ridiculous choice. You either have to get a Bluetooth keyboard or you have to spend $300 to $400 more. And now you're looking at the base iPad and you're like, what if I want just a little bit nicer one? It's sitting right there. It's $100, $150 more. And there you go. I think they're going to sell a ton of these. Maybe not a ton on the grand scale of consumer electronics, because we know that iPad sales aren't as gangbusters as they once were. But I think that a lot of people who would have otherwise bought the cheap iPad and been kind of bummed a little bit and they weren't sure why, but they knew that the keyboard thing was there, will buy the more expensive iPad and be super happy.
So Apple told me that the $329 iPad is by far the best-selling iPad, which is super interesting to me.
Okay.
Makes sense. Cheapest one. What is most interesting to me is the amount of people who are currently cross-shopping the old 10.5-inch Air with the new – or the old 10.5-inch iPad Pro with the new 10.5-inch Air.
That's impossible. They're the same. I mean
– they're so close to being the same.
People will come at me about the processor, but I don't care, man. They're the same freaking thing. The box that Apple gave us to review for the keyboard – was the iPad Pro keyboard. It says iPad Pro keyboard on the box. I use the 10.5. I bought the 10.5 Pro, and it's been my iPad. So I'm trying to review the iPad Air, and it's actually really difficult because it's just my iPad. It feels exactly the same.
That's kind of the parts bin idea again.
Yeah.
They took in a 10.5-inch iPad Air. They took out two speakers. They gave it a slightly worse display. No ProMotion. And they added an A12 instead of an A10X. I think the A10X versus the A12 is kind of a wash. I literally do not think anyone will ever notice.
Probably, yeah. But the move they made with the MacBook Air was they took a MacBook Pro and they took out a bunch of stuff and replaced some stuff and put some less expensive parts in it. And then they gave it a wedge because people like the wedge.
Yeah.
Same great keyboard though.
Just looking around, tons of places, Best Buy, what have you, are selling the old 10.5-inch Pro for $499. If you were, if you're the iPad Air at $499 is the thing I'm gonna, you should just buy the old Pro. I'm just telling you right now, but you will like having ProMotion and the two extra speakers more than you like 8 more months of iOS 16 support or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
that old Pro is going away though. It's not.
Yeah, you
got to
catch it while it's hot. But I think that's it's just there. Right now, it's there, and it's a better product at that price than the Air.
The thing that bothers me about the new iPad Air, new iPad Mini is that. This is Apple's old design language, and they've already shown their new design language. So it feels like when you're buying this, Apple's a little slower to update iPads, so maybe it'll be 2 years until there's a refresh. But it's sort of the last of the breed. I mean, Neil, you got a little bit into the fact that this is Lightning instead of USB-C. There's a lot of this that's backwards looking. And so as much as these seem like great buys if you actually need them right now, it is definitely one of those cases where there is something much better seemingly, theoretically, around the corner.
I think I've come around to the idea that Lightning is never going away. Go ahead, Dieter.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's the dark thought, is these aren't backward looking at all. These aren't backward because Lightning is never going away. The next iPhone is going to have... These iPads make me think the next iPhone is going to have Lightning.
Oh, you know why I think that? Because the new AirPods have Lightning, too.
Yeah.
Right? Like... Lightning is Apple had an insane answer. I asked him, 10 different ways. Like you do. Like, I'm, you're like a journalist. You're like sneaky. You're like,
don't like, say that.
You like ask him, you like go through the front door and then you try to sneak in the window if you can't get
How
in the front
come,
door.
Why not Lightning?
I was like, let me throw some letters at you. U S. Just smile if you like these letters. No, it's like I asked him like 5 different times, right? And their answer was, we think USB-C is a pro feature, which I understand in the context of an iPad, right? What they're talking about is this enables you to plug your fancy digital camera right in and get a high transfer speed. This enables you to plug in a 4K display or whatever you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I understand.
What it does enable me to do is tether my camera to it and do live shooting the way I can with Mac.
Yeah, right. First of all, USB-C on the iPad is like so limited anyway. But yeah. They're like the higher throughput of the bus is like why it exists and why we want it there. We want to enable all these use cases. It's pro. Only pros want to do this stuff. Everything else is wireless. And then they're like, no one's going to do that stuff on these iPads. But the idea that USB-C, which like literally every phone except for Apple phones has as their charging standard, is a pro feature is fundamentally ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think there it's a distinction they're making between sort of like what does a big base of consumer iOS devices use? It is Lightning. And then we have this like middle ground of the iPad Pro that's closer to the MacBook, and we're going to put USB-C on it. But I just think Lightning is going to be here for a long time. I think the iPhone going to Lightning or the iPhone going to USB-C is a beautiful dream that will never ever ever become reality.
Yeah.
Lightning is a nicer port fundamentally too. It's smaller, so we'll just see. Maybe I'm wrong, but based on that answer, and again, I really did ask him like 10 different ways. I was like, "What does pro mean to you?" Like it was like every which way I could get at it, and they weren't having it. Speaking of the AirPods, we should talk about the AirPods.
Yeah.
By the way, Dieter, in case you missed it 15 times in my video, Dieter will have an iPad Air review next week.
God.
So then the AirPods come out.
That was Wednesday.
That's Wednesday.
So we're going in like we're starting in the middle. We're going to the end, and then we'll jump back to the beginning.
Well, because they Max in the middle, but like the Mac, whatever. The Mac briefing was crazy, but AirPods. So AirPods come out. They've changed the chip from W1 to H1, which stands for headphones. The W chips will remain in the watch, where it has gone, I believe, from standing for wireless to watch. There you go. H1 chip basically does a couple things. It pairs faster. It's Bluetooth 5 now. But still running Apple's, like, if you do use it with an Apple device, it still runs some custom Apple stuff on top of Bluetooth 5. But it's Bluetooth 5 now, so it'll work better.
Will it let me be paired to two devices at once and know where the audio is coming from?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see. That's fine. We're going to get them soon. We'll find out. So has faster pairing, both like out of the box with the thing, faster switching between Apple devices. So it's two times faster to switch from like a phone to a Mac and back again, faster out of the box to pair, and it has a better basically DSP like noise cancellation for the mic. So when you're outside and you're on a call, it'll sound better, and then to the person that you're talking to, not to you. This is like I realize it's very confusing to describe. It has better noise cancellation on the microphone, so that when you are talking, the other person can hear you better. And then it has obviously Hey Siri support, so you can say Hey Siri, it'll like light up. Hooray. Like, new AirPods. Big news is a wireless charging case, which is Qi, which is cool. LEDs on the front now, Lightning on the bottom. So you get that package for $200. You can get it without wireless charging for like $130, $150, something like that.
I think it might be $160. Anyway, yeah.
Some number of bucks. The middle number of bucks. And you can just, if you already have AirPods, you can get just the wireless charging case for your existing AirPods for $80. I asked them about recycling AirPods.
$160.
$160. And they're like, yep, just bring them in. We'll recycle them for you, which has been a big question out in the world. So I want to dig a little bit deeper on that because they're basically made of glue. It's just like AirPods are like 100% glue. So I kind of want to know what they mean by recycling. But, you know, they feel disposable, and I think it's Apple has a commitment to recycling, so they say they're going to recycle them, which is cool. Notably, they're Qi. They are not meant to be charged by air power, which is the wireless charging mat that Apple announced in 2017, and everybody thought it would come out this week. There was a rumor. I think the Wall Street Journal published something.
Why does Qi make that true? Wasn't air power going to be Qi compatible?
It was built on Qi. There was some like story about like the Qi people fighting with the Apple people. Right. I just think like the Apple Watch is in Qi, right? Okay. So I think if Apple is going to put out its new wireless charging AirPods, the most Apple move is to say it charges wirelessly over air power. Air power can also charge your other Qi devices, but the AirPods charge on it. Like, that's the most Apple thing they would do.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Like, the phone is Qi because, you know, you got Qi stuff everywhere, but the AirPods and your watch, you got to buy the air power. But no, in the second I saw the AirPods charge over Qi, I was like, air power is not coming this week. There's there's no way they give up all of those attached sales of new AirPods to like some garbage Qi pads on Amazon.
Do you think we dreamed Apple's announcement of the air power? It's like a collective fantasy.
No, because it's all over the place. It's like there's like pictures of it that people keep finding on like random international Apple websites. Mm. There's like a new one today on the Australian website. Yeah. There's code out in iOS 12 that like obviously shows air power. Like
But you could say there's a lot of evidence of like a Roswell like government conspiracy to cover up aliens and stuff like that. You know,
yeah,
there's a lot of evidence out there.
The Wall Street Journal did say that they've approved the manufacturer of air power.
Yeah, yeah, and there's been analyst reports, but look, we're recording this on Thursday. Tomorrow is Friday. By the time you're listening to this, we could be totally wrong. Air power could be out. So just go ahead and tweet at Dieter if that happens. He's out back on.
You know what I'll do if it comes out and you tweet at me? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a face. I'm going to air glower.
Air glower. It's good. It's good, Dieter. You did a great job. Your mother's very proud of you. Anyway, it didn't come. But charge over Qi. AirPods sound bad. I just need to say it as much as I can. They don't sound great. And I don't know how we went from they sound exactly like EarPods. Remember those, the wired ones?
Yeah.
Everyone in the world knew EarPods sounded bad, but then we cut off the wires. Now everyone's like, these are the best product Apple's ever made. And it is true. They are very convenient. They pair very nicely. It is fun to flip the case. All the sort of like cultural aspects of it are great. It's a meme. People love them. But I just need to tell you.
It's a very good meme.
Yeah.
And it's also I liked seeing stuff like the H1 chip in the sense that like tech companies do lots of different things, but a lot of times it looks like the thing that this tech company has done was dreamed up like by some people in a boardroom trying to figure out how they can capture a market. And then there's other things that tech companies do that were obviously some engineers in a basement with a stopwatch. And that seems like a lot of what this H1 stuff is. Like, this is going to pair faster and switch between devices faster, and the battery's going to last longer. Like that. I mean, you know, there's also just the march of Moore's Law that also helps them out. But that's really exciting because it's just quality of life improvements for something that a lot of people use all day.
I think the Apple story fundamentally is that they have their chip design team, right? Like they bought some small chip companies and they made them a big chip company inside of like a huge company. And that pushes them forward in a way that no one else has really been able to match. So like if there's a reason for Apple's dominance, it's like their in-house chip design team, which is doing the A-series processor, which is like lapping the field, which is doing these custom controllers like the H1. Like all that stuff is cool. Like no doubt. I just think maybe they should, you know, Dr. Dre works there. They could be like, do you sound good? And you might be able to tell them. Like, that'd be cool. Like, just a fact. Trent Reznor on the Apple payroll. You could just ask him. Do you sound any good? Like, maybe he would tell you. Lady Gaga, she's not Polaroid's creative director anymore. You should bring her in.
Free agent.
Free agent creative director. Lady Gaga rolls in, tries on some AirPods. Some people think they sound great. Whenever I tweet about that, people are like, they're great for phone calls and they're great for podcasts, which is true. But every time I'm on an airplane and I see somebody walk in wearing AirPods, I'm like, you're not going to be able to hear shit because they don't cancel anything. Like, you're going to hear engine noise and like a little bit of a podcast. And then every now and again, I watch those people try to turn on the movie on their seatback display and then look at their AirPods in despair and then ding the light because they need wired headphones. Just a fact. All right, last thing Apple announced this week, new iMacs. This is all chip stuff. Paul, tell me. It's 8th generation Intel chips and some medium good Vega graphics.
And a couple of 9th generation chips, typically you have to like custom configure. Apple has taken the past, I'd say, 4 years of computer technology, mostly from the laptop world, and smeared it over its iMac line.
like a really messy bagel, those iMacs.
Yeah. Yeah, you know those spreads that, like, they're really tasty and flavorful, but they kind of rip up the bread a little bit?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the iMac Pro, you can now get a Radeon Pro Vega 64X with 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is a two-year-old GPU.
Wait, the iMac Pro or the iMac?
In the iMac Pro, there's a $700 upgrade option, which is the Radeon Pro Vega 64X. Mm-hmm. And that is a GPU that came out 2 years ago.
Right, but the new iMacs that came out, those are new Vegas or old Vegas?
I mean, there's like a lot of like 2018 type GPUs. There's nothing new in these. There are newer chips. They are an upgrade from existing iMacs and existing iMac Pros. But there is nothing like that's that exciting. It's mostly 8th gen. There's a little bit of 9th gen in iMac. And mostly you have to pay for, you know, really crazy upgrades to get truly new stuff.
Yeah. So Apple, when they were like telling me about these, they basically were just like, people use iMacs in ways that you don't expect. And it was fine. And they were like, you know, people use them in businesses and like kids use them to learn to code and like families use them to look at photos. And by the end of it,
you mean computers?
Yeah. Like, by the end of it, I was like, yes, the iMac exists. But like, it was just one of those moments where like Apple world is so disconnected from the rest of computing because there are lots of other good looking all in ones now that people just buy.
Right.
Like, it's not like everyone at HP just like fell off the face of the earth. They like looked at the iMac and like, we're getting our ass kicked. And they like made a computer that looks pretty good. And it's true. The new HP all-in-ones look fine. The Surface Studio exists. Also full of laptop parts, I got to be honest with you. But it exists. It's like a really interesting all-in-one. And so like at some point, you got to wonder, like, does Apple feel that competition? It's the same thing with the Mini. They don't have any competition. So they're just kind of like, here's some new stuff. Like, we just like bumped the chips in it. And that with the iMac, it's like you do have competition. Are you just not feeling it at all? Like, I kind of wonder.
I don't know. Every time I see someone with an iMac, other than I understand there are certain people who are constrained to the Mac platform and need like an iMac Pro for some very specific reason. Other than that, it's just, but why? Why do you have this overpriced bin of laptop parts on your desk with a non-upgradable screen?
Well, because I will say I have such a bin of non-upgradable laptop parts on my desk at home. Mm-hmm. That 5K display is amazing for the price point.
Yeah.
You can't really get that display elsewhere. You can go out and buy a screen and you've almost spent as much money as the iPad. Like, you're basically getting a free laptop glued to the back of your 5K display.
Okay, fair.
It's like a weird way to think about it. And that's so great. Like
from Paul's perspective, the laptop is smeared on, and from your perspective, it's slathered. Like
it's a smear of laptop over the back of a 5K display. That's great. I mean, like, what do I use my laptop for at home? I like do some work. I edit a lot of photos of the baby, and the 5K display is like tremendous for that. It's like, okay. I have it, but
all right.
Once you configure it to the top end, you're like, this is crazy. Like, this is legitimately ridiculous. Where is the modular Mac Pro Apple's been promising for over a year?
Yeah.
It's not yet available. I imagine we'll see it at like WWDC in some way. That's my guess.
You can spec up an iMac Pro with 256 gigs of RAM, and it only cost you an extra $5,200.
It's ridiculous.
On the other end, you know, the iMac, the 21-inch iMac, starts at $1,300.
Yeah, that's a little, like, that's way crazy.
You would struggle to spend more than $600 on an all-in-one at Best Buy. That would most likely be fairly similar in performance.
Yeah, but I bet they were there. Where every PC manufacturer cheaps out as a display.
It's true.
Like that display would be like milky blue, right? Like you would watch a video on it, and like half the pixels were just like hold in place, while the other half like up to, you know, like they all cheap out in this way. Apple rarely cheaps out in this way. I was going to say never, but that 329 iPad is like a cheaped out display. rarely cheaps out on display. So like there's something there. All right. We've gone on for way longer. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the event next week, which if you may have noticed, Apple cleared the decks for by announcing everything else this week. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Canva. They say Rome wasn't built in a day, but you know what you can get built in a day? Your creative deck. You can generate creative decks to use for all your important presentations with Canva. Thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. You want a sales presentation for a tech company? Done. Create an employee onboarding plan? No problem. Just type it in and watch Canva work its magic. You'll have generated options in seconds. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and you're done. It's a serious time saver at work. So whatever you do at your job, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You can generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. It's AI for every department. It's easy to learn. It's even easier to use. And because it's built in Canva presentations, you can stay focused on the task at hand with no app switching. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.
We're back. Like I said, every day this week, there's been some Apple news, right? Yeah. You had your iPads, you had your Macs, you had your AirPods, you had your iPad embargo for the reviews. Tomorrow's Friday. Who knows what will happen tomorrow when you're in your car?
Macarena.
You could be driving along and suddenly air power just drops out of the sky. You never know. But presumably Apple released all this stuff because they didn't want to talk about it at their event that's on Monday. It is, look, that list of things I said in years past would have just been an Apple event. New iPad Air, right? New model of Air. Updated iMacs. Updated iPad Mini. New AirPods. All that stuff, that's four new products. Apple would have happily thrown an event for four new products. Apple, Steve Jobs once made the entire tech press come to California to introduce the iPad, the iPod Hi-Fi, which was just some speakers. Like, there was a time when this stuff would
they
have
get blowback when they do that. This would have been a disappointing Apple event. They can't. They've got to at least redesign one thing. Or launch some one all new product.
If they had had AirPower, I bet this would have been like its own little hardware event.
Yeah,
right.
And they would have set expectations, and so nobody. Yeah, that. I mean, when they introduced the iPad last year, the new version, it was like an education focus, and so they had a whole bunch of like education stuff. But they just had the one thing.
Yeah, they made an entire school full of children miss school for a day so they could talk about how great they were at education. Anyways, but in years past, this would have been an event. It wasn't, right? It's a slow drip of news all week, this week. So that on Monday, everyone can be focused on their big event to announce their streaming TV service and their paid news bundle in Apple News.
Yeah.
And maybe some other stuff. We'll see. But I think it's just those two things. And what we keep hearing over and over again is this is a new kind of event for Apple. Like, you can tell they're like, the pressure's on, like they're feeling it. So they cleared the decks. They don't want anyone to be distracted, get all that stuff out of the way. They don't want people to show up and be like, where are the new AirPods? Like, it's done. It came out in a press release on Thursday. It's got Chi, shut up, buy this TV show. Like, we're done with this. Like, focus on this. In this event, what's particularly weird about it is I think we already know most of the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not like rumors necessarily. It is literally Apple has been putting out press releases about famous people they're giving money to for TV shows for like a year.
Yeah, and if it's not Apple, it's, you know, their producer or the studio that's making the thing or whatever. The Hollywood has a different PR cadence. And so we know the names of a lot of these shows. Like, yeah. We know the concepts behind them. We know who stars in them. We just don't know when they're coming out, how they'll be packaged, and how much it'll cost.
Right. So there's
if they'll be any good.
There's that key point. So there's a show about like the morning news, like a office comedy starring Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston. There's a show where Snoopy plays some sort of detective, I believe. That's a real fact that I heard today.
I think it's maybe an astronaut.
Astronaut. Is he a detective or an astronaut?
Snoopy teaches STEM, science, technology.
Well, that's like being a detective.
Doing math. Yeah.
You're discovering the world. You're looking for clues about how it all works.
I'm not going to help you with this one.
Whatever, Air Glower. So there's this like long list of shows. And then there's like, you know, the Peter Kafkas of the world who know all the network executives. And so Peter wrote a story for Recode this week that's like, we kind of know what this looks like. Their goal is not to compete with Netflix. Apple's goal is not to get you to sign up for $10 a month to stream a bunch of their original content. They have nowhere near enough original content to do that. They haven't licensed some massive library of old TV shows and movies the way Netflix did to launch. Their goal is, we're going to bring you in with these exclusives inside of the Apple TV app, and then we're going to go to partners like Starz and Showtime and whatever, HBO, and we're going to make it easier for you to subscribe to them, and we'll take a cut off of that, which is very much an app store pricing model, right?
Right.
Doesn't Amazon already do that?
Amazon already does that. And so Kafka and one of the cable executives on Background of Speech is like, this is just very incremental. Like, we understand this model. What Apple doesn't have is a partnership with Netflix. They're not going to sell Netflix or have Netflix content in their TV app. There are some other big players out there who are apparently not participating.
We don't think HBO is going to participate, do we? Or do we know?
I think HBO will participate.
Okay.
But so you get the shape of it, which is, you know, the Apple TV has always had this weird TV app on it. That TV app is in all the other devices as well, or iOS devices as well. You make that the home screen of the Apple TV, and you start to say, do you want to look at HBO? Like, subscribe to HBO through Apple for $4 a month. Subscribe to a bundle of HBO and Showtime and Starz for $8 a month. And then you push the button, and then like those shows start to populate this TV app alongside Apple's originals. Right. And like, that's a big model. Peter also reported that Apple's going to host the streams now.
Mm-hmm.
So that you're not going to get kicked out into some other app. Apple, like, the TV app will start to do the work of streaming the content to you.
That's actually kind of a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Because like a bunch of these other apps, like, they've been using BAM to stream, or they rolled their own and it sucked, or they use BAM because BAM was good. BAM is the one that did the good version of HBO. You know, wrestling, blah, 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 but Disney bought them. And like, all of those contracts are like, they happen to be expiring right now. So Apple handling the streaming means that like, you can trust that you don't have to go to another crappy app, and you can trust that the stream will actually like stay up during Game of Thrones, which nothing else does except for BAM. Anyway.
Yeah. So I just feel like we have the shape of it. The big question is, what's it really going to look like? How are the apps across all these devices going to like operate? Are they going to release a version for the Mac? There's no TV app for the Mac. Are they going to do something on the web? Are they going to update the iTunes app that they just shipped for Samsung TVs to be called something else other than iTunes? Which is ridiculous. there's stuff to be like learned at this event, but there's a part of it. It's like, this is going to be 45 minutes of watching TV show trailers, or like having famous people be like, we're so excited to work for Apple.
Yeah, no, there's going to be a lot of famous people in the room, I'm sure of it.
What happened to the dream of this being like 3 years ago or whenever the rumors started of this being like for cord cutting? Like, is there no live TV play in here at all?
You know, so right now the TV app sends hilariously delayed push notifications. So like, it, you know, you like, it'll send you notifications like, the Golden State Warriors are mounting a furious comeback in the fourth quarter. And you like look at, and it's like the game's been over for 3 minutes. Like, they have this thing where they do want to kick you to ESPN. They do want to kick you to I think, sports in particular, because Eddie Q loves sports. But I think that'll be like, we're going to disaggregate the ESPN app and like layer that through here. Or we're going to have you push a button and go to that. I don't think they're going to do like the Sling TV, the PS View, sort of like streaming service cord cutter thing, because honestly, those products are just not great. Right.
Yeah, and they're also not consistent across the country. Like you never know what you're going
to
get.
They're like hard to use DVRs in your web browser.
Yeah, which at one point was my dream. Don't get me wrong. Like a complicated web-based DVR was once the pinnacle of technology, but we've just moved on.
How about this? After 45 minutes of watching trailers for PG and PG-13 rated TV shows.
Ooh, PG-13, I don't know, man. That might be a little bit risque for Apple.
Sorry, I didn't want to push it. PG rated TV shows, the lights dim, and then Gene Munster walks out and announces an Apple television.
Yeah, that's what I want most of all. There's just like no way that's going to happen. Yeah. I don't think they put the iTunes app on Samsung TVs if they're getting ready to release their own TV.
Yeah,
what I think is crazy is like, you know, the Apple TV story starts sort of in like the modern era with Steve Jobs telling Walter Isaacson that he's like, quote, cracked it. Mm. He's going to build the simplest TV. He's like finally figured it out. And like we've just stumbled our way to this place where they're going to sell like a Showtime subscription in this TV app. And like, I have a lot of doubts. I'm just going to be really honest. Like, I always have a lot of doubts with streaming services. Like, we're in the moment with streaming wars, you know? And, like, I do think we should make the Go 90 tracker of success. And, like, I do think the Warner one is going to go 90. And I do think, you know, like, Disney Plus will be a success.
I built the tracker. Yeah. You go to gone90.biz. You have to use a desktop because I don't have drag and drop working on mobile. It's gone90.biz. And then you just drag all the different streaming services. And you make it your own scale. So if you put like Netflix on the left and then Go 90 on the right, and so it's on a scale of Netflix to Go 90.
Oh, this is incredible.
There's also a Quibi mode, and it just turns everything into Quibi logos.
I love that there's an add piracy option, and that's what adds Plex.
Yeah, Plex and Popcorn Time.
Oh, this is tremendous. All right,
so gone90.biz. And tweet a screenshot of your rankings. And there's probably a lot of things I should add.
But what's the scale on the left and the right? What are the labels?
You choose.
Okay.
So I put Netflix on the left and gone90. I feel like that is the spectrum of streaming properties.
Yeah. Why does Quibi get such a giant logo and everybody else is small?
Because I ran a script to auto resize everything to like 100 pixels wide. And so it just depends on the aspect ratio.
Gotcha. This is tremendous.
The logo.
Well, I think you should fix Go 90 and Netflix on the scale to make it clear for people.
Oh, just always put them there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll try to do that before we release
the Go 90 scale of success.
Maybe that'll be a button. Recommended scale of success.
Are you saying that like other people might potentially pick the Crunchyroll to Criterion channel scale of success?
Yes, I want to know what you think.
Anyhow, the only reason I'm so skeptical is it doesn't sound simple, right? It sounds like another thing that you have to pay for that's going to ask you to pay for more stuff that won't have all the stuff.
And I already pay for all sorts of stuff.
What if it just becomes like Amazon's thing isn't simple either, but it is because I get it through Amazon Prime, which I use to pay for other services. And then it's just kind of there. And it's another thing that keeps me in Prime. What if Apple like just does the bundle and makes Apple Prime and you get iCloud storage that isn't ridiculously low, which you have to pay for now, and you get Apple Music and you get the, you know, the news thing and you get the TV thing.
Yeah, but what's in the TV thing?
Well, who cares if it's got like five things. Yeah, you're buying it for the iCloud storage.
And then so maybe you get a subscription to HBO.
Well, no, that's extra.
Like, what do you get? Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, what are you going to get? Like,
you get the morning show. You get like Apple's eight shows that are good.
But that's insanity.
Well, I mean, it works for Amazon.
No, Amazon bought another library of stuff.
Yeah, but like you on Amazon you get like The Marvelous Miss Maisel, and you get John Krasinski's, you know, Tom Clancy Punch People TV show, and you get, you know, some other like specific Amazon Prime movies. It's nowhere near the library that you'll get from, you know, Netflix or HBO or whatever, but like there are a few exclusive shows on Prime.
Yeah, I just want to point, but Amazon also made like Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
Like, right. They're playing at that level.
Right.
And they bought this huge library of other stuff where they're like, do you want to watch The Martian? It's free on Prime streaming right now.
Right.
Apple just has its like 25 shows where Tim Cook is giving notes like, please make them less mean and don't show Apple products in a negative light. Like what I'm saying is the Amazon strategy makes sense because you buy Prime and then you get like a reasonably good Netflix clone along the way.
Right. Right.
And then they're going to make some more originals. By the way, Amazon's originals program, like its TV studio, film studio operations, notable disaster. Like mm-hmm. not going well, falling apart, executive turnover. Jeff Bezos is like, we got to make more mass market stuff. We can't just do all this like niche premium stuff. But then they also have like the library of TV shows and movies that like is fake Netflix. Or then you have Netflix where you just like pay $12 a month and literally any interest you might have, there's at least a C-plus show you can watch.
Yeah.
Like, just down the line. And then there's also Schitt's Creek, which is a delight. But, like, literally, you're like, anything. I want to see dogs. And it's like, here's 50 shows about dogs. We mm-hmm. just made them. Like, I don't even know who did them. Here they are, just, like, all day and all night. You're like, I want to watch spunky children fighting aliens. And Amazon and Netflix is like, here's some remix stuff we made. Here's The Punisher. Nothing happens for the middle four episodes, but you're going to like it. Like, I don't see Apple doing that.
Apple doesn't need to do that. They don't need to defeat Netflix. They just, I don't know what they want people to do. They want people to just live in their little bubble, in the little Apple bubble and hang out there more time in the Apple land.
Yeah. I mean, their whole pivot is to services revenue. So they want you to spend more time on their devices in Apple services where you will spend more money. Got it. Nailed it. Right. If 10% of iPhone owners spend $1, right, they've made $100 million. Like, it's fine. Like, but it's just, to me, it's crazy that they haven't, this is what they're going to.
Maybe they did buy a big old, you know, old library of stuff and that, you know, that's possible.
Maybe that's why Netflix has no old movies on it. Apple owns them all.
Yeah, maybe. It's like possible. The reason I'm saying like they haven't, in a definitive way before the event, is what Dieter was talking about before. The cadence of Hollywood is so different.
Right.
We already know. Like, there's a post on our website. Here are the shows Apple's going to launch. Like, just confirmed over and over again. Like, we kind of know what that catalog looks like. What we don't know is, like, what's the sell to the average iPhone owner? How are you going to buy it? And then that sits next to pay for Apple News now, and you'll get access to, like, a range of paywalled magazines and potentially the Wall Street Journal. And that, to me, is, like, actually sounds pretty good, right? Like no ads, no tracking, like a bunch of high quality magazine stuff that I don't like running in the paywall. Like I'll take it. But how much is that going to cost on top of everything else?
I like this Apple Prime idea.
Yeah. I mean, there's also rumored they're going to put out a credit card next week with Goldman Sachs. So
what if you could buy groceries at Apple stores? Think about it.
That would be incredible. There's like the Genius Bar is replaced by the snack bar. Yeah, I mean, like, we'll see. Monday, I think Monday's going to be a big day, but I think you just look at this week where they just cleared the decks of every other question that people had about their existing line of products, right? Are you going to update AirPower? What's going on with the iPad mini? What's going on? These iMacs have been updated in, like, 600 days. Like, they just, like, did it. Like, here's a bunch of new stuff. We're going to own this week of news. We're going to take the focus off the gadgets, and we're going to talk about ourselves as a services company with our big streaming service and new service launch. There's also a little bit of a rumor that they're going to do something with games. But I got my doubts.
Yeah.
Gene Munster, Apple Television. We've remastered all your shows in 5K.
I mean, it's kind of like they should just make a TV at the end of this all. Oh, here's another question. Are they going to lower the price of the Apple TV?
Yeah, they need to.
It's really expensive. Roku's killing them at like $39. Are they going to make a little stick? Like, I doubt we'll hear about any of that stuff on Monday, but they need scale for these services. I don't think they can just count on like iPhone owners to watch, you know, whatever shows they make on their phones. Like they got to hit TVs.
I walked you through my parents' like Apple TV upgrade saga, right? They were going to get a new Apple TV because the old Apple TV was dying because Apple stopped still supporting it. So go to Best Buy to get a new Apple TV. Oh, those are like $200. Well, you could get a whole TV for like $200 or $300.
Yeah.
So they got like a $600 Vizio. That's like enormous.
Yeah.
But it all started with just wanting to get a new Apple TV, but they were real expensive.
Yeah. No, that's right. You go in, you spend, you know, $800 and like the TCL with a Roku. It's got Dolby Vision. It looks beautiful. It's like one of the best TVs that's reviewed. It will track the shit out of you until the day you die. But it does the job. And like, I think most people don't care. Like, I think that's just the answer. Like, most people just want the big screen. And so now you got to convince them. I think Apple has to find a cheap way into that. And I don't think it's just AirPlay 2 on a Vizio. Like, if their solution to getting people to watch this reboot of Amazing Stories is to have everybody with a Vizio TV AirPlay it from their iPhone, like, I think they've probably made it. It's probably a miss. Feels like a miss. But the rumor is that they gave Samsung the exclusivity and they'll roll out the app to everybody else over time. But that's just a rumor. Who knows? All right. Real quick. Are you going to like Insta sign up for the streaming service?
No.
Absolutely not.
He's clicking the piracy mode button right now.
I have this feeling that some of these shows are going to be bad enough to be like memeable. Like it's going to be like a can't miss cultural event of like Apple trying to entertain you with television. And so that I'll be sad about, but I don't think I'm going to pay for it.
I am very excited for this event. I'm very excited for this pivot. I'm very excited for Apple to like confront what it means to put actual cultural products into the world as opposed to just talking about like AirPods as being the culture, right? Like Apple believes that it's like a fashion and culture company, like the ecosystem of Apple Watchers.
Apple loves musicians and artists while Spotify steals from them and sues them.
I can't. Oh, that story is so annoying to me. I said we weren't going to do tech policy on this show, but if you want a hot 10-minute rant about Apple and Spotify, I can deliver.
You know, we're
break him up. That's all I'm saying. All right, I won't do it. Maybe I'll do it after this. We're going to take a break or come back.
Support for this podcast comes from Constant Contact. If you're a business owner, you already know that it's really, really hard to cut through the noise of everyday life. If you want to connect with your customers, you need to break through the noise. You need Constant Contact. Constant Contact is a marketing platform that makes it easy to reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and connect over email, text, social media, and more. Whether you're a marketing guru or just learning the ropes, Constant Contact offers writing assistance tools and automation features that make it simple to say the right thing at the right time. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, we're back. Paul Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Every week.
Always.
You bring the Vergecast home with a segment that you like to call.
I believe I have met this robot dog before in a past life.
Deja dog.
Have you guys seen this? That's this Tombot?
Yeah.
So you know, there's that therapy seal. I think kind of started it all. It's like, so this idea that there are people who, for whom it is therapeutic to have something like an animal to pet and to hug and to love, but they, for whatever reason, can't have a real animal, so they have a robot. And this is just, you know, moving along that that spectrum. This is a robot that was designed by the Jim Henson Creature Shop. And that's possibly why this dog looks so familiar to me, but I cannot put my finger on it. Like, it kind of looks like, I mean, there is like a Muppet aspect. Like, maybe there's a little bit of Ralph.
Yeah.
But also, it's like one of like the Chris's in the Avengers, maybe, or like Matthew McConaughey. I can't decide.
You can't decide if this robot looks like Matthew McConaughey, Chris Hemsworth, or a Muppet.
Yeah, well, like Dami mentions, what's the from Neverending Story, the dragon thing?
Yeah, I see that in there.
Falcor, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just, I don't know. It's like, someone I know very well from many blockbuster films has put on a mask and is now a robot dog that's therapeutic.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
Why isn't there... Oh, there is. I was going to say, why isn't there a Falcor Technologies? Because that sounds like the name of an evil company in a movie.
Mm. Yeah.
But did you know that Falcor is the innovative data platform that powers the Netflix UI?
I actually think I did know that.
Well, I love this dog. Dog was a sensation on the internet.
Also, surprisingly affordable.
How much is the dog?
It's like $300 for early backers. So it's probably a $600 dog. But like Ibo is almost $3,000.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I'm buying this dog. But he's wanted a dog for a long time. And I think this Matthew McConaughey dog is the way to go. Very obviously. All right. Dieter, tell me about Stadia.
Oh my God.
What symptoms do it cause?
I think that was a Steven Sanofsky joke on Twitter, by the way. So I just give full credit there. So Google announced a streaming service with one game. They haven't announced all the games or the price.
But it has one game, but there is another game that will also come to it.
Yes. So it is a video game streaming service that has the following advantages. It sits in Google's data centers where they stream the games to you, which means that they theoretically will have better latency than other gaming streaming services of the past. You can buy a Stadia controller for an undetermined price, and it actually connects via Wi-Fi directly instead of like through a console, which means that will also theoretically help with latency. It will be streamable to Chrome browsers, Android tablets, Android phones. Unclear if it will stream to, say, the Chrome browser on an iPad. My hunch is no. Or a Chrome browser on like an iPhone. My hunch is no. Because it's basically just a streaming video and all the stuff happens in the cloud, you get a bunch of advantages. So one, if you're playing it on your phone, it's the same hit on your battery as though you were streaming a video. So you can play for longer. It saves states across devices.
Wait, can we just back up for one second?
Oh, God, I can keep going.
No, I want you to keep going.
Yeah.
I just want you to unpack that real quick, because I think the fundamentals of game streaming are much simpler than people think, right? So basically all that's happening here is your controller talks to a game running in the cloud.
Right.
And they've managed to minimize latency between your controller and the cloud and the video streaming to your Chromecast or whatever.
Right.
So that it looks like your controller is controlling something that's happening locally.
Directly.
So they're just streaming a video to you.
They're just streaming a video to you, and you're controlling the video with your controller.
And you're controlling the video with your controller.
It's like, that's it's all like Bandersnatch, but faster.
And no one's ever managed to pull this off before, I think, is the key.
Correct. And we would be filled with unending levels of skepticism and doubt if Google hadn't done this Project Stream beta earlier in the year, where we were like, oh, actually, this is okay. But that doesn't mean that we are fully bought in and we think that latency won't be a problem. Because I'm not. I think that you'll be able to play a bunch of games that'll be super fun, but I think that if you're a twitchy first-person shooter kind of person, I think you're going to have slightly more problems with the latency here. You also need, like, also it plays great on terrible connections. Like, look at it on this 15 meg down connection. It's like, have you been to America where 15 meg down is, like, pretty good in a lot of places? Most places, in fact. I think they're recommending 25 down. Anyway, there's the nerdy stuff of what are the actual gaming like hardware that they're going to put in their data centers. And I think Paul can tell us about that. And then there's a very, very complex discussion about its interaction with YouTube. You can save stuff directly to YouTube. You can like click a button to get YouTube like tutorials on the thing you're stuck on. And if you're watching a game on YouTube, they will just litter the YouTube webpage with Play Now buttons. There's just going to be links everywhere, but instead of opening up a web page, it's going to open up a game in Google service.
I'm like super into that. Yeah. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I will say my big question here is, one, why do they name it Stadia?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not great. And two, like, again, this works in theory. There's actually been some companies that have done it before, your OnLives or what have you. Didn't Sony bought Gamefly or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
What was it called? Was that what it was called?
I think so. And then Microsoft is going to be doing this later this year too. Like they're coming next anyway.
And Microsoft's one is called xCloud. They say they're going to go big at E3, so it's coming. My major question is like, the economics of how games work doesn't really match up with like a subscription like this. So like a Halo
you
game.
You don't know that it's a subscription. You don't know that. You could have to pay for each game individually. Like, we have no idea what the pricing model is.
That's true.
It could still be $60 a game.
I just fully assume it's going to be a subscription. I don't know why. I just fully assume it's going to be a subscription.
Wait, how does the gaming not line up with subscription?
Well, if you want to play Assassin's Creed 3 or 5 or whatever the latest one is, Assassin's Creed, pick your historical context. The latest one, I think, is Greece. Do you have to buy Assassin's Creed or is it part of a subscription? Or is it like Xbox gives you, in their thing, and even Sony does this a little bit, where you get like a bunch of old games and like random indie games, but then you buy the AAA games. If there's a subscription here, I think that's more likely. Or it could just be that like, you got to pay the subscription to get like your save states in the cloud and just have access to the service, and then you have to buy the games on top of that. Unclear which of those are. But like, people pay for PlayStation Pro and Xbox Live subscriptions all the time, and Nintendo Switch subscriptions. Like, that's just part of the industry. And the only question is, what will that subscription for Stadia give you access to games or not?
Yeah, and I just, for whatever reason, I think I just assumed, just the way that Google works and the way that they want to make it easier to play games. I don't think you can put up that subscription. I don't think you can have, you know, you're watching some streamer on YouTube playing some AAA game with like play now buttons, and you hit it and Google's like, that'll be $60, please. Like that doesn't feel in line with that goal of, we're going to blur the line between watching and playing. Because they were talking about all kinds of crazy shit. Like, you're watching your favorite streamer play a game, you push the button, you're in the queue, you're going to play against them next. That is awesome. Like, that's a cool idea. But the idea that you're also going to just like discover games this way and constantly be purchasing, they left a lot of questions wide open, basically.
I mean, but that said, if people are using these, a significant fraction of the time they're playing games, let's say like an average gamer probably plays video games at least like 4 hours a day. And so if someone's playing, you know, 2 or 3 hours on Stadia a day, that Google listed their specs. The one thing that they were weirdly detailed about was some specs. Like, they've got a custom GPU that is equal to the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One X
combined
10 teraflops. They've got a custom x86 processor, which is wild, and 16 gigabytes of RAM. But in a sense, that almost doesn't matter because it's, I don't know, it's instanced. Right, that machine isn't dedicated to you. It's hard to describe. So they had this phrase, we're giving the entire data center to the developer.
Yeah.
And I feel like Google's actual vision here is not that you will rent from a library of old games, right? Like, it's not the old-timey Netflix model where a lot of movies exist and we will allow you to watch them easily. It's a new timey model where we think that there are new types of experiences that would be possible. One thing they mention is something like an order of magnitude or definitely a lot more people in the same multiplayer game at the same time, because everything is running all in the same place. Like, the data center that is the multiplayer server is also the data center that is the computer that is going to blast the video of the game. And there's conceivably a lot of other possible video games that aren't really about running one game on a machine, but you're just looking at views on a game, if that makes sense. A typical multiplayer game like Overwatch, right? You have like however many people are, I think it's 5-on-5. It's been a while since I've played Overwatch. You have 5-on-5 people, right? So that's 10 people playing a game, right?
Yeah.
So that's 10 machines, 10 instances of Overwatch. And then there's a server, and that's running one instance of Overwatch, and that everybody's connected to that server for that one match. But in the Stadia model, it's possible that you could just run one game and blast out 10 video streams of that game, 10 different perspectives of that game as just streaming video. Like, you know what I mean? So it's almost irrelevant what these specs are, because it's not like all the experiences they are expecting to do are just dedicated playing Assassin's Creed by yourself.
Yeah, and obviously multiplayer is a much bigger deal than, right? Like, that's what people are watching other people stream on Twitch and on YouTube. It's rarely like, I'm going to watch this full let's play of Assassin, like one person slowly grinding through Assassin's Creed. I do it, but I like, that's where the action is, Paul. And so I think you're right. Like, the specs are irrelevant because they have nothing to do with you. You're not buying those specs. Next year, they're going to change.
Yep.
Right.
Right. Like, they're going to swap in some new cards. It's going to be fine. Like, I think they said that just because it's gaming and like, that's flashy and fun. Right. And like, the old consoles are at the end of their life cycle and the new consoles are going to come out. Like, I think the bigger point here is exactly what you described, which is, can we re-architect games, especially these like huge multiplayer games, like run in this world?
And can we re-architect games so that it's a platform lock-in like the world has never seen before?
Yeah. So I will say that Tim Sweeney, who's the CEO of Epic, has just like been arguing with fools in my mentions for like 3 days. It's great. Tim, come on the Vergecast anytime you want, instead of just tweeting with and around me. But you know, there's like a lot of competition in PC gaming stores, which is great to see.
Yeah.
Right. Especially when, like I was saying, like, I can rant about the App Store versus Spotify all day and all night. The problem is that Spotify has nowhere else to go. If they want to be on the iPhone, Apple sets the terms. The, you know, the Epic Store is like, what is it? It's like 88-12 is the split for developers versus the store. Like, they're not even trying to make money. Steam is something different. Like, they're all over the place. I think that's great. Right, like, you're seeing this bifurcation on the console side. Microsoft does not seem to care about where Xbox Live goes anymore. It's on the Switch now with Cuphead. Like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then Google's like, we're gonna have exclusives, and you only be able to play for Stadia. It's like, this is insane.
I don't like. It's so weird because the exclusives are simultaneously like my least and most favorite thing as someone who plays video games. Because exclusives mean that like mom and dad are fighting, and now half of the good things will not be available to me. But exclusives also mean that this is a really hot market that you know, companies are willing to sink a lot of upfront investment in to make a lot of games and entertainment to try to grab market share.
Console exclusives are the presents you get when your parents are divorced because they're really trying to impress you.
Dieter, I'm gonna go with this. I'm gonna just take this to the next logical step.
Strong.
This implies that Sony and Microsoft were once married.
And you know, Google is your prospective stepdad who's trying to win your love.
I truly, as someone who is married to a divorce lawyer, I'm going to tell you, none of this is correct. 0% of this is accurate.
My parents have made it a loving relationship for my entire life, and I'm really grateful to them.
So one last thing, which we're going to get into way more once this thing gets released later this year for whatever it costs and, you know, whatever games happen to appear on it besides Doom Eternal, is I'm just going to quietly mention that here is a titan of industry, a company that, like, has a dominant share in online video. YouTube, slightly threatened by an upstart competitor that got bought by another giant, Twitch, using its market dominance in video to push a new service in a slightly different domain.
Yeah, I think that's out there. I was arguing with Russell Brandom about this yesterday, or whatever day Stadia came out. You're making the antitrust argument, right? Like, they're a giant. They're gonna leverage YouTube to kill Sony.
Yeah.
Break him up. No. I'm less sympathetic to in this case. Like, their competitors are Microsoft and Sony, a little bit of Nintendo, right? That is fundamentally already a duopoly, right?
Okay.
In console games.
Yeah.
In PC games, it's basically a monopoly, right? There's like these additional stores, but it's all running on Microsoft's.
Oh, John Porter, our reporter from the UK, pointed out that, you know, like one way you could use this technology is, you know, run a desktop, and that if this thing works, you know, Stadia runs on Linux, and so Linux gaming will finally become a thing, and that means that this is the year of the Linux desktop.
this is a boom for Linux gaming. It really is.
So you pull that all the way out there, and like, suddenly we're like, Linux desktop is gonna, like, they've got to do it. Like, I don't think our antitrust conversation in tech. I think it is great to say Facebook is buying Instagram. which is a legitimate competitor. We should prevent that because we don't want them to like monopolize upstart competition. But Google like spending a shitload of money next to YouTube to say people on YouTube are already doing this thing and now we're just going to let them do it here. It just seems fine to me because it's not like – I don't think they're going to kill Sony and Microsoft. I really don't. Like Microsoft is going to release a competitive service to this in a matter of months.
Right.
Right? And it's going to be pretty good probably because Microsoft is good at video games and they're good at cloud stuff. Well, Google's really good at cloud stuff. Extremely medium at video games.
Yeah.
Right. Like I don't know. I'm just like
yeah, I'm not saying
the,
like
this is the one where like the to Paul's point, the giant tries something and just like falls off the cliff. You know, like Stadia is the thing that leads Larry Page to like quit Google. Like Sergey Brin is like, you know, he's sitting at the edge of a trash dump holding a Stadia controller being like, this could have worked. Like, you never know.
I mean, I'll be very sad in 5 years if I'm complaining that, like, my whole gaming library is stuck in Stadia and I'm trying to leave Stadia because they're spying on my children, but I can't leave Stadia because they have my, you know, like, that would be annoying. But if all they do is just add more competition and flexibility and, like, more options to an already... Like, I think that's one thing that's just really wonderful about gaming is there are so many choices you can play in so many different ways, especially on the PC, especially if you run Linux and it's got your graphics card has good Vulkan support.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Paul, if this is the thing that makes, like, Linux on the desktop, like, super happen, I will be so happy for you. I will come out there. We're gonna do. We're gonna make some Linux PCs together. It's gonna be great.
All right,
where's that?
I will say this is the best thing that's ever happened to Android games ever. Because nothing like gaming on Android relative to iOS has always been kind of despite the fact that there's been many attempts to make Android gaming phones. I think this is the best shot at making a really good Android gaming experience that we've seen in a long time.
But it's just gonna stream the video.
Yeah,
but you need a connection to do that.
Yeah.
5G, like, bro.
If this stuff works on like go-go Wi-Fi.
5G at the edge.
Actually, the one thing Google did not talk about was 5G. And this is like the prototypical 5G example, right? Everyone talks about VR, blah, blah, because of latency. But this thing that they're describing, a zero latency, high bandwidth application, this is 5G. This is 5G stuff.
And by the way, 7,500 data centers or whatever with high-end Linux PCs and custom GPUs, that is not cheap. And so Google either is going to need to charge a lot of money for a subscription, or it's going to need to charge per game and also charge money as, I don't know, or this is a loss leader for something else that's evil, nefarious, or just a typical Google, I don't know, somehow organizing the world's information, because isn't that what they're always trying to do? You know what? Secretly scan your books.
If they bundle Google Reader with Stadia, I'm in.
Incredible. You could run a local instance of Google Reader, and it's doing the RSS scraping
in your in your Linux desktop in the cloud.
RSS at the edge.
Well, no. So here's the thing: Google Cloud is like not as much of a competitor to Azure or AWS as like Google wants it to be. This is a way for them to just instantly drop a massive, successful application on Google Cloud. They can just do it.
Yep.
And then they can go out to all these other customers. So, like, of course it's Google. Like, do you know how they're paying for those 7,500 data centers at first? The money they make on Google Search, which is also how they pay for Android. Like, it's fine. But at some point, this probably has to look like a business for them. Otherwise, you know, they're a public company. They can't just be like, we made Stadia because we're a bunch of nerds. We love it. We're just going to lose money on it forever.
Well, that's just, I feel like in the back of their mind, is there this thing where it's like, well, even if the gaming thing doesn't work out, we need to deploy all this edge computing hardware anyways.
Yeah, because 5G is coming. I think we've determined this is a giant conspiracy to own the 5G cloud. Is that true? I don't know. That's definitely not true.
Yeah.
I'm not going to. What about AKAI?
Well, here, I'll tell you this. Yeah, you know, Google and Sony are partnered on a lot of things. Sony is not good at software, just a fact.
I can tell you all about that from my experience today, if you'd like. But
yeah,
not great. I mean, like,
but Sony TVs run Android TV. Sony, you know, makes some phones every now and again, just for the sake of doing it. There's a world in which the PS5 has like Stadia integration. I mean, kind of cool.
PS5 is just a Chromecast.
That'd be amazing. They're like, we didn't get this right. It's a Chromecast. I mean, I'd be into that. I mean, look, I was saying last week I set up PS4 remote play and I bought a controller and I had to use it. Well, this week I have used it, and it's pretty fun. It's pretty cool to just be able to play like PS4 games on my phone with a SteelSeries controller. It's not perfect, but it works just fine on Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
There is an enormous amount of lag, and because it's like this weird, it talks to the PlayStation Network stuff, and then it connects directly to the PS4 and the PS4 streams. So just like making it connect is a lot of Sony software, just like having to do stuff. Like steam whistles are going off, like, you know, like the factory foreman's like, get that connection, and like 25 minutes later you're playing a game. It's like not smooth, but it's pretty cool, man. And so like if Google can do this faster, I'd be super into that. All right, Paul, one last thing. Oculus Rift S.
Yeah, this was a nice little surprise. I mean, maybe everybody knew this was coming. I didn't know this was coming. Oculus is upping the resolution. This matches. It's basically Oculus took their upcoming standalone Quest headset, right? Which has higher resolution screen and inside out tracking. So you can have hand controllers without having to put up those little cameras on your desk. And then you can never stand far enough away from the little cameras because you have a small apartment. And so VR turned out to be a $2,000 investment down the drain. So you got inside out tracking. And so like modified controllers to work with inside out tracking and high resolution display. And so it's basically a Quest if you have a PC. And the same PC specs, they like lowered the refresh rate on the screen so that even though you're driving higher resolution display, you can use the exact same minimum spec that worked with the original Oculus Rift to power the new headset. All the games work. But yeah, and it's $400, and they're phasing out the old original Oculus Rift. But they wanted to be pretty clear that this is their evolutionary move for the Rift. This is not their revolutionary, I don't know, whatever is actually revolutionary in their eyes, but this isn't it.
There's a wave of these like higher res headsets coming out, right? Did an HP do one this week?
Yeah, there's an HP one. I mean, this one is actually built by Lenovo, and I think Lenovo's done some Windows mixed reality stuff, and so Oculus partnered with Lenovo on this one. And then I think there's some other, I think there's some Vive stuff coming out. I'm not sure. I haven't paid too much attention, but I was not expecting a Rift S.
Yeah, it's cool. Dieter, do you want to make your disclosure just so
you've done it? My wife works for Oculus.
We have to do it. Someone will call us out if we don't do it.
Yeah. Can I tell you guys my favorite thing from GDC? Unless you want to talk more about Oculus.
No. Favorite thing from GDC, and we should wrap this up.
Okay. A few months ago, NVIDIA shows up with PhysX 4.0. It's so exciting. It's so much more accurate. It's simulation. It's going to be so much better physics. So PhysX is the physics engine in Unreal and Unity, obviously the two most popular game engines. So come to GDC and Unity gets on stage and they're like, we're making our own physics engine called Unity Physics. And also we're partnering with Havok to use their physics engine too. And then Epic gets on stage and says, Unreal is going to have its own new physics engine called Chaos. And neither engine has announced official support for PhysX 4.0. So I think there's a big beef brewing in the physics of game engines space. The reason it's really exciting to me is because multiplayer physics is a really rare thing still in video games. It's a kind of a next gen thing.
Yeah.
And to do it, you need deterministic physics, which is one of the features of Unity physics. Because floating point numbers are weird on different hardware and there's a lot of stuff to it. But, I'm hoping that's one reason why these multiplayer experiences that are being pushed by Epic and Unity are going to have more physics in them. And that's why they needed their own phase extension. I could be totally off on that, but that's my hope.
Is this just like the race? Like the cool thing to do is say you have a phase extension now? Like the cool thing last year was big AI.
I feel it feels like a beef. I feel like what it feels like is that NVIDIA's been puttering along with PhysX, and either PhysX 4.0 went in a different direction than these engines wanted, or is like has a wrong sort of architecture or something that didn't match the specs that they had.
I like
and
it.
And so
I like a beef.
Yeah.
Beef, the original competition. The theme of the Vergecast, is there enough competition? That's another app we should make. Like, is there enough competition? And we just like label markets. Put the iPad mini all by itself in the corner.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, we got to wrap up. We've gone way over time. Apple's having that event on Monday. That's going to be a thing. We're going to get into it. There's going to be all kinds of coverage all over The Verge. Dieter and Nick are going to be there. It's going to be super fun. We'll follow up. I'm actually going to be at the Winter Music Conference in Miami Beach at the end of next week. I'm giving out an award with Danny Deal, Best DJ Technology. It's going to be super fun. We'll do some demos on stage. So I'm going to try to find a way to be back on the show, but there's a chance I won't be. But the streaming stuff, I want to talk about it, so I'm going to try to figure it out. You can also listen to Recode Media with Peter Kafka, which I assure you next week will be very interesting because we got this stuff. Recode Decode with Kara Swisher, Pivot with Kara and Scott Galloway. And all three seasons of Why'd You Push That Button are out in the world, and I will tell you we're talking about that next season right now. So it's very exciting. Listen to those. You can tweet us. I'm at Reckless. Dieter's at Backline. Paul's at Future Paul. We do love to hear from you. Pull over in your car. Send that tweet right now. And give us 5 stars wherever you can. And go to voxmedia.com/podsurvey and just tell the people you love the Vergecast. Just do that for me. It'll be great. Everyone will love you for it. I'll love you for it. We'll see you next week. Rock and roll.
Paul.
Promo code.
Thanks to Canva for their support. Canva wants to make your presentations come as easy as those thoughts that pass through your head. And thanks to their AI, you can start with a simple prompt and watch Canva go to work. Choose your favorite style, customize the content, and you're done. It's a serious time saver. Whatever you do for work, Canva presentations can give you a head start on your deck. You can generate sales presentations, marketing decks, HR onboarding plans, you name it. Finish your deck faster. Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Art, Beats, and Lyrics, a new documentary from Vox Creative along with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Honey and Colt Creative. Directed by Bill Horace, Art, Beats, and Lyrics showcases how a humble art show has grown into a cultural phenomenon. The film unveils the origin stories of the event's founder, Jabari Graham, and its curator, Dwayne W. Wright, exploring how Atlanta has shaped their individual paths while also revealing their distinct roles within Art, Beats, and Lyrics. The documentary follows Jabari W. and several of this year's feature artists as they gear up for ABNL's 20th anniversary tour, captivating thousands of fans at each and every show. Stream Art, Beats, and Lyrics now on Hulu. Please drink responsibly. Whiskey Specialty, 35% alcohol by volume, Jack Daniel's Distillery, Lynchburg, Tennessee. Jack Daniel's and Tennessee Honey are registered trademarks. 2024 Jack Daniel's, all rights reserved.